From Greenwich to Danbury, Wilton to Westport, Fairfield County Talk Radio is here to help serve the community.
Good morning. I'm Lisa Wexler. Welcome to Fairfield County Talk Radio. We are broadcasting live from Orem's Diner, which is my diner. This is my diner. I literally live down the road, and we are here in Wilton for the Cup of Joe political show, our debut broadcast, produced by Shark Creative and made possible by a host of local businesses, including Georgetown Orthodontics, with offices in Reading and Norwalk, the Wilton Chamber of Commerce, and Art and Builders, forward-thinking, multidiscipline construction. I'm here this morning with one of our great state legislators, Gail Abiel, who represents a district that includes Wilton and parts of Norwalk and Westport, and she's also a good friend. Good morning.
Good morning, Lisa.
We're both here in sunny, and we're looking at the scrambled eggs, and everything looks good.
Yeah.
So you made it. So should we just launch?
Because let's go.
There are three distinctly different issues that are in front of the legislature right now, each of which, if they were passed, would have, I think, a fundamental change in the relationship between citizens and local and state government, and even, and I'm not exaggerating, our own way of life here in Connecticut. So let's begin with the one that now has at least 8,300 people on a Facebook page, Hands Off Our Schools, and that is the proposed regionalization of school districts, of which you have become an expert.
Unfortunately.
Unfortunately. And Gail, tell us again, I know that you are ranking member on the Appropriations Committee. What other committees do you sit on?
I serve on education and on transportation.
Oh, there you go.
There you
Tolls
are.
Tolls and schools, the
yep.
two biggies.
Yep.
Okay, so you're in the center of everything, and hearings were held last week. Give us a catch-up and tell us exactly what is before you. Let's start first, before we get to tolls, let's start with the regionalization of schools. What bills have been put in front of you?
Okay, there are three bills. One is Senate Bill 738, which is introduced by Senator Looney, who's the President Pro Tem of the Senate. And that is a bill that would require all school districts that are in towns of 40,000 people or less, so that's a lot of towns, to consolidate, regionalize with other districts. And he kind of floated the model of the probate court regionalizations. But
as an example of what he said was done well.
In a vague sort of way.
Yes.
Not clear whether that would be required. And this is a bill that would go into effect in a couple of years, even if the legislature didn't approve the
plan.
Yeah,
I find that astonishing. So, these deemed approved bills.
Right.
What the heck is a deemed approved bill?
It means that people don't have to be accountable for their vote on it.
Could you imagine being elected to a legislature and getting away with not having to vote on something like this?
Well, you know, for years, Lisa, for absolute years, until last year when my caucus got a provision into the state budget, state employee contracts, which involve millions and billions of dollars, were deemed approved if the legislature did not vote up or down on them in 30 days.
So what would happen is basically all the power would reside in the committee.
Well,
in other words, if the committee went up or down, then that was done. Where did the decision
no,
make
that
take
was,
place?
No, that was on union contracts. That was the contract negotiations between the union and the governor.
Oh, and the governor.
So, right. So if they agreed on something, then the legislature got a chance to vote up or down. But they didn't have to exercise it. So they hadn't exercised it since 1997.
Okay, so now
so
we bring us
that.
Back. So that's good.
Yeah.
So now this other bill proposed by Senator Looney essentially said what? If it comes out of committee, it's deemed approved
no,
without
it would,
a vote?
No, the bill itself would have to pass. The bill says there will be a plan.
There will be a plan.
There will be a plan, and the plan will be deemed approved if there's no
That's
vote.
What I mean. In other yeah. words, the committee would have to vote on
well, no, then the whole legislature would have to vote on the bill to pass
okay.
it.
Okay. On the bill that says of a plan, but the
right.
details of the plan would be deemed
exactly.
approved.
Exactly.
Oh, and life is in the details.
There you go. The plan itself.
Wow.
That's what they're trying to do with tolls as well, but we'll come back to that, right? So there's another bill introduced by Senators Duff and Austin.
Senator Duff from Norwalk.
Right. And that would require small districts under 2,000 students to consolidate to form districts that are larger than 2,000. And then there's the governor's bill, which probably is the one that has the most traction at the moment. And it doesn't specifically say you must regionalize. And he's been very insistent on that lately, having heard a lot of the commentary. But what it does say is that there is a commission that would be formed of appointees, political appointees, not elected people, that would have until December 2020, right after the 2020 elections, to present a plan for, and the words used are, redistricting and consolidation of services.
Yes, I saw that, and a little bit fleshed out, I saw that it specifically was directed at superintendents. Yesterday there was an article about that.
That's another paragraph farther in the bill.
Okay.
And that would require districts with certain characteristics, you know, number of people, how many elementary schools, and so on, to band together with another or more districts and share a superintendent.
So
and if they didn't do it, they would have to pay a penalty.
They would have to pay a penalty.
Right.
They would lose some educational fund sharing, something like that.
Right, yeah.
Right. So, and when you take the forest and when you just step back, what you're really seeing is an insistence coming from Hartford, among some legislators, of grabbing control over the local management.
Yeah, and that's what's upsetting people so much, because it's emotional. It's not a pocketbook thing. It's an emotional thing. It is people from outside where they chose to live, which they did partly on the basis of schools. People from outside saying, this is how you will educate your children. This is how your district will be structured. This is what you're going to do. And some people feel also that it is perhaps a move to get their property taxes to be spent outside their current district as well, which I don't know that everyone knows that all of us, particularly in the smaller towns, where when we pay our income taxes and our state taxes, we don't usually get those back in our towns. Down here, we get anywhere from 1 to 3 cents back on the dollar. So those are...
We pay it in, and we use that money to subsidize poorer places in the
state.
Right,
and everybody accepts that.
That's what we do.
Been done for years with income taxes and sales taxes. But the property taxes were always considered kind of sacred.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you pay to own a place in a place. And so the money that you pay for that is spent on that place.
Right, and that's why when we have local boards of finance and first selectmen and they really care about the mill rate, it brings it back down home to mm-hmm. how much they're going to charge their citizens for town services.
Right, and mm-hmm. the citizens get a direct vote on that
yes.
in most cases.
Yes.
You know, representative town meetings,
yep.
town meeting form of government.
Right,
referendum.
Like in Weston where they don't even have an RTM, they just all go and vote on the budget.
It's like Wilton, same thing.
Oh, is that right?
Same thing.
Yeah.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what the regionalization thing is about. Now, the governor he's made a video recently where he talks about, no, this is just back office stuff. The bill doesn't say that, but he's leaning more toward that. And he mentions if the state got a contract for buying technology, software for all the schools in the state. Well, we don't need a law for that.
That's true.
I mean, they can do that right now. And as a matter of fact, in the mandate relief bill that I actually was very active in getting passed 3 or 4 years ago, there is a provision that requires the state to look into the best solution for a statewide software program.
So why do you think Governor Lamont is pushing this so hard as part of his own agenda? What's that about?
Well, I can't speak for him. I can't. I think that, you know, he certainly is in a terrible bind with the state's financial situation. So I suppose he was looking for ways to see how could you save money on the local level so the state can send less money to the towns. But places like...
It's a workaround.
Places like Wilton and Weston and Westport and New Canaan get practically nothing from the state for education
as it is.
And
yeah.
That's going to go down to zero anyway. So,
wow.
You know, I don't
know. You know
really
what I thought was most extraordinary? So yesterday, the Greenwich Times, or maybe it was the Connecticut Post, who knows, they're all owned by Hearst now anyway, published a piece in which they expressed the resentment of a lot of citizens with this idea that legislators were simply creating bills to throw them against a wall to see what would stick. and they were specifically talking about this regionalization because Senator Looney himself was quoted as saying, look, I know that Bethany is not appropriate to merge with Hamden, even though on the probate court map, Bethany and Hamden are run by the same judge. So even he, when he proposed this, and the reason he knows this is because he lives in New Haven, right? So Senator Looney understands his own particular area, the way I would understand that Wilton and Norwalk wouldn't be a good fit. He understood that Bethany is not a good fit with Hamden. But nonetheless, he wrote the bill. Well, and so people are resenting that legislators are just writing things to see what's going to fly without giving thought to the fact that they are creating a lot of angst.
Well, and that's disrespectful, not to other legislators, but to residents. And I actually, in the hearing, Senator Looney, and I commend him for this, came to testify on his bill.
Did he really?
Which Senator Duff and Senator Austin didn't do, and the governor didn't, although the governor did send staff to do that. But so I was glad to see him, and I said, if you are so, and he explained what he was trying to do, start a conversation, and I said, well, if that's what you are trying to do, is just start a conversation, you had an opportunity in this bill to be very vague. That's what concept bills are. We all know that. So why are there all these specifics in there, like the probate courts and the deemed approved and all that? And he said, oh, that was to draw attention to the bill.
And it did.
And it worked.
It accomplished that.
And so I said, please excuse me, but with all due respect, are you telling me that you had the bill drafted in a way that would deliberately mislead people? And he wasn't very happy about that. I had to ask because he said that what he put in there was not what he intended. Why would you do that? So I do think that legislators should be, and people are noticing this, I think they should be careful what they throw into bills because the public, once it is in the bill system, it's on paper, well, it's online, and it's serious, and people will take it seriously.
They have to take it seriously.
They're not going to assume going in. These are elected people. They're professionals. They're serious. People are not going to assume automatically that what's written down is just meant to play with their heads.
Without question, an individual or a family's single biggest investment continues to remain their home. And you got to go back to that. We want to have more homeowners than renters. We want to have over 60% of people own homes because we create an assumption that homeowners spend more money on their homes, take better care of their homes, have more vested interests in their community, and tend to be more active in their community, which is better for all of us who live around here. If you want that, you have to allow people to operate on the assumptions that they made when they bought their home. Mm-hmm. And one of the biggest assumptions people make when they buy their home is what school are their kids going to go to?
Right.
How do you rock that boat in a cavalier way?
Well, you've seen it happen. You've seen it happen, and that's why people are so worked up.
We're chatting with Gail Laviel. I'm Lisa Wexler. You are listening to Fairfield County Talk Radio. We are broadcasting live from the Great Orem's Diner in Wilton, the Cup of Joe political show made, produced by Shark Creative and made possible by Georgetown Orthodontics with offices in Reading and Norwalk, the Wilton Chamber of Commerce, Artin Builders, Forward Thinking Multidiscipline Construction. And I'm here with Gail Laviel, who's a state representative who represents this town of Wilton, and your district as well represents parts of Westport and Norwalk.
Exactly.
How long have you been a legislator now, Gail?
I was first elected in November of 2010.
Congratulations. So wait a minute. So 2010, so what are we? It's
this is,
18
this is my
already.
90.
Wow.
19.
You're
this
a veteran.
This is my fifth term.
This is your fifth term?
Yeah.
Goes fast.
Well, they're little bitty two-year terms.
No, but so. I mean, it's, you know, you look back and now all of a sudden it's this decent amount of time that you've been there, really.
Yeah, it seems
you've seen
to
a lot of changes.
Fast. No, I haven't.
You haven't?
No, I really haven't. I feel like I'm just seeing the same thing happen over and over and over again, and the state continues to dig itself deeper and deeper into a hole because there continues to be management by looking for revenues everywhere and not actually looking at what's costing the most money and doesn't need to.
And you could find, from your point of view, you think there's still a lot of cost cutting that can be done?
Well, the fringe benefits for state employees are
they out of whack with other state employees?
Yes, they are.
And those studies have already been accomplished, so we know
Absolutely.
That to be true?
We know that to be true. they are quite a bit higher than average. And that is not the state employee's fault. They're good
people. No, of course not. They make a bargain, too, when they work for the
you know,
state.
They always worry we're calling them the bad guys. They're not the bad guys.
No,
I mean,
of course not.
You know, if you're offered that, you take it. But it's what bothers me is the fairness issue. Because if you're in a company and somebody makes more than you, well, that's fair. You know, that's what happens. Somebody makes more than you. Great. But you're not paying for that person's salary. Whereas in the state of Connecticut, the state employees are, and I'm not talking about teachers, I'm talking about people employed by the state itself, are getting health care and pension benefits that are far beyond the wildest dreams of anyone in the private sector. But it's everyone else in the state who are funding those and are paying for them, and they will never see those benefits themselves in their lives.
So
if, there is a fairness issue there.
So if the state were to go in and renegotiate, are those all union contracts, by the way, the public employees union, right?
Yes, exactly.
They have a union. And isn't Joe Arasemowitz, who is still the Speaker of the House, although he barely beat his opponent in the last election, like by a nose, but he nonetheless got reelected Speaker, which shocked me because I was surprised that given his slim victory, he was still chosen leader. Isn't he, in fact, a paid employee of the public employees union?
He absolutely is.
So when people hear that and their eyebrows raise over their heads, they want to know how it can be that the Speaker of the House, who's largely in charge, to some extent, of negotiating on behalf of the public for these public employee union contracts, can also be a paid member of the actual union. How is that possible, Gail?
Well, there's been a lot of power vested in the majority party in the legislature for a long time. And the subject that really, really bothers me is that the state employee unions are, they always have very on-point negotiators and they're working for them. I'm never quite sure who's representing the taxpayers. And I stood up on the floor of the House a couple of weeks ago when we were voting on a contract, and I asked the proponent on the other side of the aisle, and I said, who's advocating for the taxpayers? And he said, well, that's our job.
Okay.
And I said, well, that's why I'm voting no today, because all these people are going to get an automatic 6.5% raise annually. And I don't see, when you look at the fairness issue, I don't see how that's serving the vast majority of the residents of this state.
It's very difficult. You know, I don't know how Connecticut got itself into a bind historically the way we did, because it's really not the state employees' fault at all.
Not at all.
They're all doing
their
job. They're all with limited means. They're all being cut back by attrition. We understand that there are specific departments in the state of Connecticut that are chronically underfunded, that always need more
help.
Department of Mental Health Services, Department of Disability Services. So we understand that. So how is it that Connecticut plans so poorly? In other words, how do we get ourselves into such a jam, Gail? We used to be such a beautiful state and such an economically healthy one.
You know, I don't know, because I wasn't here. I didn't move to Connecticut until 2002.
Well, I moved in 1989, and I brought the income tax with me, I'm very sorry to say.
Would you take it away with
me
again?
I would love to. I would love to if it was only within my power. We're chatting with Gail Avielle. All right, So, and we're going to do a part two, because actually I've noticed on Facebook, and we're going to talk about this in just a minute coming up, that there's yet another issue that you wanted to introduce into our public awareness, and that has to do with another bill being proposed in Hartford. I'd like to get the details from you with respect to taxing the possibility of Board of Education districts or Board of Education something or other becoming their own independent taxing districts. So we're going to get into that. We're going to chat about tolls as well. We can't ignore tolls as we sit here spitting distance from the Merritt Parkway. And which incidentally, before we get to part two, I just want to say, and I just want to say this as a driver, as someone who commutes from Westport to Greenwich every day and used to commute from Westport to Westchester every day for 4 years, that the traffic on the Merritt Parkway never gets better, but it is particularly obnoxious, and I think a particular disrespect for travelers when during the middle of the day the Transportation, DOT, is out there cutting trees. They could cut trees at a time of much lower congestion, overnight, whatever they have to do. It is so singularly disrespectful to my time to take an extra half an hour during the day to get from point A to point B. I just have that gripe.
I agree with you. And why they're when they're doing major repairs, why they don't do them at 3 o'clock in the morning?
I don't get it.
I was driving back from Hartford last night, and I got to Fairfield on the Merritt, and suddenly everyone stopped dead.
Stopped.
We were stopped dead there for 2 full hours.
No way.
I opened up my computer. I started doing work on Word documents. We did not move for 2 full hours. I was talking on the phone, couldn't move.
So, I mean, it's one thing if there's an accident, it's unavoidable, you have to wait for it to clear,
that's life. But it was
work. When they plan this, it's just unbelievable. And I just saw yesterday the next phase, the so-called eighth and final phase of construction on the Merritt, which will occur right in our area between exits 38 and 44, you know, sort of that that no man's land.
Oh, yeah.
That's starting in 2020. And they'll be rebuilding bridges, and they'll do what they have to do. But my other gripe is, as long as they're doing this work, why are they not putting cat's eyes in the middle of the Merritt Parkway? Cat's eyes would not be any kind of glare to neighboring residents. The Merritt Parkway is dangerous at night. Everybody knows it's dangerous at night. And if we could have that little reflector off our headlight and have those little cat's eyes in the middle, it might make things safer for people on those turns and in bad weather. I don't understand why, as long as we're not we're doing all this road work, why we're not putting in those little reflectors in the middle of the road.
It's a good idea.
I mean, it's to me, it's a no-brainer. All right, and on that note, I'm Lisa Wexler. Stay tuned for part two with Gail Abiel. We are in Orem's Diner for the Cup of Joe political show brought to you by Fairfield County Talk Radio. We are broadcasting live. We are produced by Shaw Creative and made possible by local businesses, which we encourage you to support, which include Georgetown Orthodontics with offices in Reading and Norwalk, the Wilton Chamber of Commerce, and Arton Builders, forward-thinking, multidiscipline construction. I'm Lisa Wexler. We'll be right back with Gail Abiel.
Outside your window, what would you like to see? Imagine all the things that could be done to beautify your property. At Michael Labriola, we've led the field over 35 years. Our expert staff brings all their best to give you what you need.
For more than 40 years, Michael Labriola Incorporated has provided complete landscape construction and site development services that will add beauty, enjoyment, and value to your property. Want to make some changes to your landscape this spring? Maybe extending your living space to the outdoors with a functional outdoor kitchen or adding a patio or walkway? Michael Labriola Incorporated can evaluate your property and offer creative ideas. 914-273-6530. Commercial properties always welcome. Learn more at Michael Labriola Inc.
Michael Labriola, our last name is the first name in landscapes.
Pasquale Ristorante. Pasquale Ristorante.
Pasquale Ristorante is the perfect dining experience. Your favorite Italian comfort food, plus the comforts of home away from home. Pasquale Ristorante has been treating you like family for nearly 20 years. And if you need catering, Pasquale will take care of it. Pasquale Ristorante, bringing family, friends, and food together.
Pasquale Ristorante treats you just like family. Pasquale Ristorante, an Italian specialty.
Pasquale Ristorante, 2 Putnam Avenue in Port Chester.
Check out the upcoming events tab on FairfieldCountyTalkRadio.com for where we'll be next. Let us know how we can help your next event. Call 1-866-SHARK-99.
Welcome back and good morning, Wilton. And a shout out to Good Morning Wilton. And we are here in Orem's Diner for Fairfield County Talk Radio, our debut broadcast, A Cup of Joe political show. I'm Lisa Wexler, your host. Joining me this morning is our own representative, Gail Laviel, who represents a district that includes Wilton and parts of Westport and Norwalk up in Hartford. And she has been representing our district, since 2010?
Yeah.
Pretty great. And this program is produced by Shark Creative, with a shout-out to our own Andrew Castellano, who lives here in Wilton. He's a great guy. And this has been made possible by Georgetown Orthodontics, with offices in Reading and Norwalk, the Wilton Chamber of Commerce, Art and Builders, Forward Thinking Multidiscipline Construction. And you can download the Fairfield County Radio app on iTunes through the App Store. Just look for Fairfield County Talk. I'm Lisa Wexler this morning, and we are here with part two of a catch-up of what is going on in this year's legislative session, which is probably one of the most active and angst-filled, I think, since I have been broadcasting for over 12 years. I mean, there's really a lot going on. So let's launch into tolls. Let's talk about it. Because there are legislators who argue that they campaigned on this platform, and it seems to me, polls coming out almost every single day. Yesterday I saw one that said 59% of Connecticut voters or Connecticut people that were asked were against tolls, but there have been other polls that have come out that have suggested that some people like tolls. We are here in the area in which the Merritt Parkway and 95 are our main throughways to get through life. And the proposal by Senator Alexandra Bergstein, the freshman senator from Greenwich, has gotten a lot of attention as well. So you tell me, Gail Laviel, where are we? You sit on the Transportation Committee. Where are we right now with proposed toll bills? And where would they go if we had them?
Well, that's one of the things I really wish I knew.
Okay.
But I'd say 2.5 bills right now before the legislature. One is a Transportation Committee bill, which has a lot of stuff in it that I'll talk about. There's the governor's bill, and both of those just had a hearing in the Transportation Committee.
Okay.
And then there's a third one, which is a Senate bill that has nothing in it at all, but it's a dummy bill in case they need a bill in the Senate, in case they need something to stick more content into.
All right.
So the governor's bill just says the DOT will make a plan to have tolls. The committee bill says there will be a plan to have tolls. There will be created a new quasi-public agency, which will be a transportation authority that will make all the decisions. Again, another agency of appointees. It also says that when the plan, you have to pass the bill, then they make a plan, and then the plan is deemed approved.
Again
with the deemed approved, yeah. So that's essentially it. Let me say that since I have been in the legislature, there have been toll bills almost every year.
Okay.
And I've never voted for any of them, not because I have this great prejudice against tolls as a concept in the sky, because they work. They have tolls in a lot of places. They're okay. But we've never been presented with an actual, this is it. This is how much it will cost to build them. This is where we will put them. This is how much you will pay to go through them. This is what we will do with the money. Nothing.
Nothing. So you feel it's irresponsible to vote for something where you don't know what you're voting for?
Absolutely, because if I vote for this, and then my constituents are, and everybody else, are obliged to drive through these things and pay X, and not only that, X can go up at the discretion of this outside thing.
Right, like the MTA.
I've inflicted something on my constituents without knowing what it is. And I don't think that that's right and proper. It's just
why
not
do you
right.
think so many legislators feel that because Massachusetts and New York have tolls, that there's an issue of fairness that interstate truckers have to be paying for our roads? That's the argument that I keep hearing.
Interstate truckers do pay for our roads.
Okay, can you explain that?
Well, when they go through, they have to they pay a tax on their mileage, actually.
Oh, and it goes to the state of Connecticut?
It absolutely does.
So don't legislators know that?
Yep.
So
you're
why?
Operating on logic, Lisa. Don't do that.
Well, but I mean, because that's the argument that I keep hearing when I interview other legislators, that it's not fair. They don't pay their fair share. So what you're saying is they do pay their fair share.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know what fair is, but they certainly
pay
their
something.
Share. Absolutely, they do. And the other point that I would make is that there's a couple of points I would make. One is there was this lockbox that was voted in by the
in
voters,
November, right?
Which says if there is money already in the special transportation fund, it must be used for transportation purposes. It doesn't say anything about money that may be destined for the fund, but that's not in there yet. So one of the things that one of the contentions that the proponents are using is that there's not enough money in that fund to keep it solvent, and we need tolls now. Of course, we can't have them for about another 4 or 5 years because it takes that long to install them. But anyway, forget
that. And it's expensive,
that.
Isn't
it's
it?
It's expensive. So that they're saying there's not enough money, but there's also in law right now a requirement that the sales taxes on new cars, which is not a new tax, we've been paying that forever. That will be a phased in, they'll move that over from the general fund to the special transportation fund.
Right.
And that'll be phased in over 3 or 4 years.
Okay.
In the governor's budget, he stops that.
I know, I've heard that from some other legislators, but it doesn't make sense.
That's in essence a raid of the transportation fund because the money's not in there yet.
Yes.
So they can still do that. That's why the lockbox is ineffective.
I see.
So they're actually, and of course the explanation, I mean it was an honest explanation, we can't afford it. We can't afford to take money out of the general fund because the budget's in such bad shape. So that's thing one. Thing two is we all know that there are going to be more electric cars eventually. There's going to be more fuel-efficient cars. And perhaps in the future, the revenues from the gas tax will decrease and perhaps
but
disappear.
But they haven't declined the
they
way
have
people
not.
Know. I've,
and
I've
the
seen
current
that.
Projections make them... show them as flat
I saw
for
that.
A number of years in the near future.
So there isn't this emergency imminence for tolls.
So if the gas tax were totally to disappear,
right?
Well, you know, maybe there's an argument there. So I have asked for projections. And I also introduced a bill requiring the DOT to furnish us protections every year. The Transportation Committee did not raise that bill. And I've asked the new DOT commissioner, who is a very competent guy, to provide projections, and he said that they would.
Okay.
So I'm waiting for that. But, you know, if the gas tax revenues really do disappear, not if we cut the gas tax, but if
right.
they actually disappear because
right.
of market forces, you may have an argument.
Right. And but then they'll figure out another way to tax us. They'll tax our electric more.
Oh, I know.
They'll figure it out.
Well, there are hardly any cuts at all in the governor's budget proposal. It's all new taxes.
And I want to talk about that a little bit because some of them, I think, are not being widely enough reported, and I think they should be. For example, they want to tax veterinary services for
I was
the first
just going to say, you and I both have puppies.
I mean, really. And they want to tax legal services, and they want to tax haircuts.
Accounting services, consultants.
Yes, and the reason I want to talk about this is because I think, and this is my own view, it misses the big picture. When you have to pay sales tax as a small... I've always been a small business person. I've had my own law practice, and I've had my own broadcasting company. And it's all been very small, very nice. But the truth is, small businesses have to spend a disproportionate amount of time, which costs them money, on administration. If we, as haircutters and vets and lawyers and accountants, have to collect sales tax, that is an actual administrative burden. That costs us time and money. And that is not insignificant in terms of creating a friendly climate for people in Connecticut to come work and do business.
That's right.
I think it's a bigger picture than just a little bit of sales tax. I think it creates potentially a very unfriendly business climate.
There are, this legislature seems to be specialized and expert in finding more and more ways to overburden small businesses. And there, you know, there are other
sales
things.
Tax
state-run retirement program.
State tax creates a potential for audit from the particular authority that watches sales tax. It is a burdensome thing. You ask individual stores, and they will tell you they very often get tripped up with sales tax. It's something that always has to be watched.
Absolutely.
And I'm just astonished that, again, in such a sort of dismissive, cavalier way, that there's all these taxes that are going to be imposed on small businesses that are struggling to stay alive.
By the way, I should mention, I'm glad that that came up. This Friday, the Finance, Revenue, and Bonding Committee is holding its hearing on all of the governor's revenue recommendations. So all those new sales taxes, plus Senator Looney's proposal to have all the car taxes that are currently levied by the towns canceled and instead have a statewide car tax, and which would then be redistributed to towns at the state's discretion. So the towns would lose all the money they currently get off their car tax, plus the 1% statewide mill rate on property.
Yeah, that's a new one, too.
That's all in Senate Bill 431. So all those taxes will be heard at a public hearing in the Finance Committee on Friday.
And how likely, given the current makeup of the legislature, are they to pass?
I don't know yet, because I sense that there are some disagreements between the governor and the majority party.
Okay.
And we, right now on the Appropriations Committee, we're just looking at the various segments of the budget, you know, each subcommittee, each department.
You're looking at what to spend, they look at what to raise.
Right, but we're just looking at the pieces right now. Nobody has said how they see the whole picture.
Okay.
So I don't know which way they're going on their budget.
Now, we are in March.
We are.
How does this typically, Gail Avielle, play out? In other words, how long does this process typically take?
Well, if it goes the way it's supposed to, which it didn't 2 years ago, it took until October, because our numbers were very equal. What is meant to happen is the policy committees, like education and transportation, finish their work by the end of March.
Okay.
Appropriations,
soon.
Appropriations and finance have until basically the end of April.
I see.
So they finance votes on a revenue package and appropriations votes on a spending package by the end of April.
Okay.
Then those go, and I believe this year the revenue package is a Senate bill and the spending package is a House bill.
I see.
There's no rule about that.
Okay.
That's just, however, because the Senate and the House have the same job in Connecticut. No difference between them.
All right. I know that. And they're all 2-year terms and all of that.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. So during the month of May, there's a lot of backroom stuff that goes on.
I see. Okay.
And then...
So May is the okay.
Oh, yes. And we're on the floor in session all the time.
All right.
And then on June 5th at midnight is the end of the session.
I see.
So we are supposed to have both chambers vote on and approve and pass
a budget,
which includes the budget bills, which just have bottom line figures, basically, and a few line items, and the implementers, which are the bills that discuss exactly how the revenue is to be raised.
Yes, the implementers.
And lots of things creep into those at the last minute. So, for example, some of these regionalization bills, if they die, they can come back to life in an implementer, and sometimes you only have 5 or 6 hours to read the implementers.
I see.
So, technically, this is all supposed to be finished by midnight on June 5th, and we'll see.
Okay, we will. We're chatting with Gail Avielle. We're at Orem Steiner. Good morning, Wilton. And speaking of good morning, Wilton, Gail, you've chosen to live in Wilton. How long have you lived in town?
We moved here first from France. Aww. In 2002, and we stayed here for 3 years, and then we left for 2 years, and then we came back.
And why Wilton?
We made the choice at the time because we wanted somewhere that was in commuting distance. We had always lived in either New York or Paris, and we'd always lived in apartments, so we wanted a really nice house. And we found that we could get what we could afford what we wanted in Wilton.
With land and privacy.
Exactly. And it's so pretty.
It is so pretty.
And of course, because we don't have children, but...
except for your dogs.
Well... But the dogs don't need to go to school, right?
This is true.
And they'd probably be better off if they did. But, you know, and it certainly was a good feature that Wilton had such good schools.
Yeah,
because
it's
always
a nice feature.
Because it meant that people here care about education.
Yeah, that's right. And so it's a shared value system.
Yeah, so all that was very important.
Listen, my kids are out of school a long time, but we've continued to reside in Westport and, frankly, pay the taxes knowing that it's going to a good school district because I believe in the value of public education. So I'm frankly, I know it sounds crazy, I'm happy for my money to go that way.
Yeah, so
I'm
am I.
I'm happy for my money to support good public education. I have no problem with that.
Yep.
So, you know, even though I'm not one of those people who only stayed until my kids left school and then left. But, you know, those kind of people in communities were never the kind of people I was attracted to because I'm a long-termer. I like to dig my feet in and get active where I live.
Yeah, you invest yourself.
I do.
You invest yourself.
I do.
And you're an institution in Westport anyway.
I'm an institution. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. I can feel the layers. So, you know what? And speaking of that, you know I have another life as a probate judge. So, of course, I would be remiss, Gail Laviel, if I didn't ask you. How are we doing in terms of appropriations for the probate court system with all of the contributions it makes and all the money that it saves? I saw Paul Kinnear, our probate court administrator's presentation, and I saw you actually speaking with him. Thank you. I think the probate court system is, frankly, an underknown, maybe in some places undervalued, cost saver to the taxpayers of Connecticut. We save a lot of money because of the services that we provide and the way in we handle a lot of very delicate family issues without other interventions.
I, as you know, I'm a big advocate of the probate courts, which they pay for themselves kind of by doing the big estate work, but the bulk of the work they do
That's
is
correct.
For people who are not able to advocate for themselves and need conservators. And so the state does provide some limited funding.
Limited funding, but the vast majority we're self-supporting. Our pensions are self-supporting, by the way.
I will tell you that the probate courts are a little bit in trouble right now.
Yeah, because of a promise made in 2011 that wasn't kept.
Well, there was a filing deadline. There's a technicality as well. There's
a
filing deadline that causes them to lose $7 million, and it's sort of an oversight, and that has to, in the governor's budget, that has to be fixed.
That has to be fixed. It has to do, I believe, with the phasing out of the estate tax and the way in which the timing of it affected the probate court system fiscal budget.
So we need to address
that. But that was an oversight.
Yeah, that has to be addressed.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, good. Altogether, we need consistent funding because we operate on the assumption that approximately one-third of our funding will come from the legislature and the rest will come from fees that are generated. And as I said, our pensions are self-supported. We are very fiscally responsible as an entity, but we have to operate on the assumptions that the money that was promised to the probate court system by the legislature when we consolidated in 2011 would still be available. And unfortunately, over the last 3 years, that money was not available. That money was not properly appropriated. So now we're in catch-up phase. We didn't want to be.
But, no, of course not.
But because we operate, and if you come to my particular probate court, you'll see that we write on the back of every piece of paper that we are very, very careful with taxpayer funds. We're chatting with Gail Laviel. I'm Lisa Wexler, and you're listening to A Cup of Joe, a political program inaugurated right here at Orem's Diner in Wilton. Good morning, Wilton. This is the new Fairfield County Talk Radio, and Fairfield County Talk Radio is going to be broadcasting live from many other places throughout Fairfield County. Very, very excited. Andrew Castellano, who is the head of Shark Media, has founded this company, and it is a company that is based here in Wilton, Connecticut, because Andrew lives in Wilton, Connecticut. This program is produced by Shark Creative and made possible by Georgetown Orthodontics, which has offices in Reading and Norwalk, the Wilton Chamber of Commerce, Arts and Builders, Forward Thinking Multidiscipline Construction. And we've got an app, the Fairfield County Radio app, which we encourage you to download on iTunes, because then at a moment's notice, you can press it and you can see what's happening in our own community. I'm very excited about it because Andrew is a fantastic dynamo, and he's doing something really great for our entire community. So how long have we got, Matthew? A couple more minutes? Good. I want to talk about one more thing. You had mentioned online on Facebook that there is yet another thing for taxpayers to worry about. What is this introduction of a bill in Hartford that would be able to have Board of Education's independently tax?
Right. Well, that's just a proposal it's a bill that's being heard in the Planning and Development Committee on Friday, and it would, all except for the five biggest school districts in Connecticut, which are Bridgeport, Hartford, New Haven, Stamford, and Waterbury, except for them, all other school districts would automatically become independent school taxing districts. So, in essence, what that means is and this is explained in the bill very precisely, that all powers that municipalities currently have to tax, to borrow money, or to appropriate money for educational purposes will pass to those taxing districts, and municipalities will no longer have any say in those matters. So,
First selectmen can't be happy about that.
No, they're not.
Do they know about it?
Yeah, well, Lynn Vanderslice in Wilton has made a statement about it. She's very unhappy about it. And it's not something that...
Where is this coming from a policy point of view, Gail?
Well, I'm trying to figure that out. And
okay.
I simply cannot find a rationale for it. It is not a school regionalization bill. Nothing to do with that. It would apply to single town local districts. It would apply to regional districts. And it would apply to local districts if they became regional. It would apply to everybody except those five big districts. And so imagine Wilton and Weston that have the town meeting form of government.
Yes.
Where if you bond money, the capital budget of the school district is, the town is in charge of that.
Yes.
Right?
Okay.
So if you're going to bond money to build a new school, the town has to issue the bonds.
Right, and that means the whole town is involved in
it. And you have a referendum.
Yes.
That the people vote for directly. That would be gone. The school district would be in charge of borrowing its own money. It would have to have somewhere a bond rating, or it would have to borrow on the full faith and credit of the state or something. But it could not have anything to do with the town. They would have to have an assessor and a collector for taxes. They would have to hire people to actually run this administrative layer. And there would be no check and balances. No checks and balances. Like today, towns have either a council or a board of estimate and taxation or a board of finance that actually evaluates how much the townspeople are able and willing to pay in revenue.
Correct.
And then they give the school district a guideline on how much they can spend.
And not only that, very often when they're elected on the basis of their financial expertise in the private sector.
Exactly.
Those are the people that run for those boards.
Exactly. So you're essentially asking the school district, which is supposed to be expert in and
education.
Devoted to education, to suddenly become bond market experts and financiers and revenue assessors, things like that. So it baffles me. I do not know what the rationale.
And that's in Planning and Development Committee.
Planning and Development on
Friday.
So that's
one to keep an eye on as well.
Absolutely.
We're chatting with Gail Eviel. I'm going to go to one question from the audience. We're sitting here in Orem's Diner. There's a question here raised by a listener as to how much land or property is owned by Yale University, and essentially saying, is all this property tax exempt? I guess raising the issue of the amount of tax-exempt property in Connecticut owned by educational institutions and religious organizations and others. Where does that factor in, Gail, in the big picture?
Well, Gail owns a lot of land in New Haven. I don't know how much.
So, Gail, you were saying about Yale University?
Yeah, so I a lot of their property is tax-exempt. I don't know how much. Nonprofit institution. But what is it for? I am assuming that it's another way that some of the folks are trying to get more revenue.
Yeah. Well, I know that Yale voluntarily gives a lot of money to the city of New Haven.
Yes.
They're not forced to do so because in our tax law, we've provided that institutions get to be tax exempt of local real estate taxes. Mm-hmm. But what they are not tax exempt, they are not tax exempt from withholding taxes, income taxes. They pay a lot of taxes. They just don't pay the real estate taxes. And that comes from a theory from a long time ago that we wanted to discourage discrimination in religious institutions, educational institutions. And the theory was that if they were taxed, that there could be towns in which they might be taxed out of existence and not be able to survive. So that's a long-standing exemption in the real estate tax law. Gail Aviel, thank you for joining us this morning.
It's been a pleasure.
It's always wonderful
to see you.
Always
to talk with you.
Always wonderful. Gail Aviel representing what district is it?
143.
The 143, which represents this wonderful town of Wilton, where we are sitting in Orem's Diner. And thank you, Orem's Diner, for allowing us to be here today. You've been listening to me. I'm Lisa Wexler at Fairfield County Talk Radio. We've been broadcasting live for our debut of the Cup of Joe political show. We'll be doing this once a month on the second Tuesday. We encourage you to come to Orem's Diner between 8 and 9 o'clock and sit with us. The place is getting crowded. People are having their scrambled eggs. This has all been produced by Shark Creative and made possible by Georgetown Orthodontics with offices in Reading and Norwalk, the Wilton Chamber of Commerce, Art and Builders Forward Thinking Multidiscipline Construction, and of course you. Download our Fairfield County radio app on iTunes. This is Fairfield County Talk. Like us on Facebook wherever you see us. I thank you, Gail Aviel, for joining us this morning. I'm Lisa Wexler. We'll be back next month.
Thank you, listener. Yes, Shark Creative is the company you think of for on-hold messages. If you want to hear how it helps, you can call Mercedes-Benz of New Rochelle, Durante Rentals, Michael Labriola, Inc., Oak Ridge Staffing, Emma's Ale House, Northeast Environmental, or just go to sharkcreative.com and listen there. Meanwhile, we've expanded our services as your all-audio resource. On-hold messages, of course, production and placement of radio campaigns on the Pete and others too. And now we also have our very own internet radio station, Westchester Talk Radio. Look for us on Facebook at Westchester Talk. Have us come out to your next event, help you capture audio from your sponsors, associates, friends. Bite into that first impression with Shark Creative. Everything audio. It just sounds better. Shark Creative.